and there are other things that seem new. Well, that's exactly what the effect of all Tolkien's work was. You might remember that I mentioned that when Tolkien was at Leeds, way back in the 1920s, he wrote two very long poems, The Tale of the Children of Húrin, which was written in alliterative long lines, and The Tale of Beren and Lúthien, which was written in octosyllabic rhyming couplets. Now, both of those tales are sort of the foundation for the Silmarillion, along with the very, very, very earliest text that Tolkien wrote in his mythology called The Fall of Gondolin, about the fall of a beautiful elvish city to the forces of evil. Those early texts get rewritten and quoted and misquoted all throughout this material. And so when you read some line that seems like it comes from somewhere else, it does come from somewhere else. And this creates that sense of great depth in the Silmarillion and in the Lord of the Rings. So they're intertwined with each other. Now, the reason that people have jokingly called the Silmarillion the Elvish Bible is that it begins with the creation of the world and at least hints at the end of the end of the world and has pretty much everything in between. Tolkien conceived of time in his Middle-earth as having three large pieces, which he called ages, the first age of the world, the second age, and the third age. The Silmarillion is primarily concerned with the first age. All the events in The Lord of the Rings happen in the third age. And in fact, with the fall of Sauron, the fourth age begins. And theoretically, we are still part of the fourth age. This is a very medieval view also of the different ages of man. The first age is mostly about the elves. And this is where Tolkien's heart really lay. And this is what he really wanted to do, was create a coherent set of stories about the elves, from their creation to their fall, to their great wars against the Dark Lord, and talking about their amazing creations and their interaction with man. So the Silmarillion begins, as I said, with the creation of the world. There is Eru, the One, and that's Tolkien's match for the one God that he believed in. And Eru creates the world out of song, in a very beautiful passage called the Enu Lindale. And he sings, and he creates these angelic beings that are called the Valar. The Valar are very important, even to Lord of the Rings, so they're not mentioned very often. Only Varda, who's the Elbereth in Elbereth Gilthoniel, is mentioned in the Lord of the Rings. But the Valar are sort of angelic beings. They're way more powerful than any mortal creatures like elves or men, but they're not actually gods. There's only one god. And here's Tolkien trying to have it both ways. He really likes the Old Norse and the Greek pantheon idea that there's a god of wind and a god of water and a god of stars and so forth. But also, he wants to make his mythology consistent with Christianity, so there's one big real god. That's how he balances that out. The one big real god only shows up one more time in the whole Silmarillion, so we're going to put him aside for now. But the Valar, the powers, again, a god of air, a god of water, and so forth, and goddesses, are very, very important.